Olga goes to the first person. It's Sylvie. She cuts off a little piece of donut between two fingers, holds it next to Sylvie's mouth, and says, "Body of Christ." Sylvie says, "Amen." "Stop," says Caesar. "Everybody knows girls can't be no priests, and you can't pretend to do Holy Communion, man. That's blasphemy."
That's author Jaime Cortez reading Jesus Donut from his new book of short stories called Gordo.
Olga don't care. She puts the little piece of donut on Sylvie's tongue. Sylvie closes her mouth and kneels there, real quiet, with a little smile on her face. Caesar points a finger at Olga's face and shouts, "I'm not gonna do no blasphemy for no donut." Caesar looks at me and says, "Come on, Gordo, let's get out of here." He walks away, and in a few steps, he looks back and sees me on my knees. "Are you coming with me, Gordo?" he asks me. "I will," I say, "soon as I get some donut." Caesar looks at me, and I think I'm in trouble. "You know what, man," says Caesar, "if you stay here, you can't hang around with me no more." Oh man, this is serious. I want to follow him around 50%, but I want a donut like 90%, so I stay.
The collection is set on the Central Coast in the farmworker labor camps where Jaime Cortez grew up near Watsonville and San Juan Bautista. By the time he was 10, he was a veteran of the annual garlic and potato harvests where he and his sister worked as kids in the fields. This book, which he says is semi-autobiographical, is a journey about queer self-discovery and about the complex identities that don't fit the usual stereotypes of Steinbeck country. There's also a lot of humor in these stories. Jaime Cortez is also a well-established visual artist, and he joins us now from his home near Watsonville to talk more about Gordo and to share some passages from the book. Hi there, Jaime.
Hello, and thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on the California Report.
Let's talk a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up. What was it like to grow up in a farmworker camp and to be a queer kid in one of those camps?
Of course, when you're a little kid, you only know what you know about where you grow up. So for me, growing up in a farm worker camp was the perfectly normal experience. I didn't realize that that was in any ways kind of unusual or out of the norm until I began attending school. And I saw that, oh, okay, most kids don't live like this. Other people have indoor plumbing when they go to the toilet. Other people have telephones in their house. As far as the queer piece of it, one of the things that I was really thinking a lot about as I wrote the book was what it means to be a queer kid, but to not have language for that yet, to not understand what that means. And so the way I experienced it as a small child was just I had feelings, I had attractions, I had certain fascinations with other boys in school, but I didn't have a name for what was happening yet. As I moved further through elementary school, you know, I quickly learned that queer was a bad thing. But in the age that the main character, Gordo, is in, who is my avatar, basically, that boy, in many ways, he doesn't have language or a framework quite yet. He just has this dawning understanding that being different can be really perilous.
Was Gordo your childhood nickname?
That is one of many things that I was called. I cycled through many nicknames as a kid from my parents, because my dad was very big on nicknames. Depending on what the nickname is, it can be something that's actually kind of, you know, like to be called Gordo. That means that's basically saying you're a fat kid. And for me as a little kid, being fat was like something I found really embarrassing because it made me, again, it's something that made me different. And so I had, you know, some shame around that, body shame. Being called Gordo was certainly something that added to that, like that anxiety about my appearance. The nicknames would go often from very, very obvious physical traits. And so if your hair was curly, it would be chino, curly hair. If you are skinny, it would be flaco. If you were fair-skinned, you would be güero. So nicknames were rampant, and there was a lot of affection and intimacy built into them. And there could also be a kind of awkwardness and embarrassment and shame built into them. It just depends.
You have such great nicknames in this book. I mean, there are characters like Cookie. My favorite is Head and Shoulders.
Oh, Head and Shoulders. That was an actual nickname of a man who worked in the labor camp who had no visible neck, basically. His head his head just kind of sat on his shoulder, so his nickname became Head and Shoulders.
When you leave a grapefruit on a countertop for a couple of weeks, the membranes and fruity ligaments that hold together that nice rounded shape slowly weaken. Gravity insinuates itself, and the citrus's bottom begins a relentless downward migration. The underside spreads and takes on the flatness of the counter while the top thins out. That defeated grapefruit shape was precisely the shape of Primitivo Doblado's head. How does he have the luck to get hired? I'll tell you how, my Nana Lupita would explain. In his wallet, Primi carries hairs from the butt of Satan himself. The luck of the devil is with him. He's protected. No matter how he works, smells, or drinks, he'll keep getting hired.
Well, you know, this book explores a lot with Gordo's character about toxic masculinity and machismo and, you know, what it means to not fit those expectations. One of the stories that really speaks to me is where Gordo's dad wants to have him start boxing and buys him boxing gloves and this lucha libre mask and, you know, wants him to start jumping rope. You want to just tell us a little bit about that that dynamic between Gordo and his dad?
Yeah. Most of these stories are overwhelmingly based in real things that happened. My father bought me boxing gear.
I pick a spot in front of a house and I begin jumping rope. My pa looks pretty excited when he sees me jump. My dog Lobo comes running to see what's going on. Caramba, Gordo, you got good reflexes, mijo. Good feet, he says. I never seen my father so happy before, and I start to jump faster and faster, and when the rope hits the ground, little rocks and dust pop right up. My papi's watching me, and he's laughing. He's so excited, he even jumps up and down a few times. Lobo's excited too, his tail is wagging, and he starts barking. I start to sing my favorite jump rope song that I learned from Sylvie. I'm a little princess dressed in blue. Here are the things I like to do. Salute to the captain, bow to the queen. Turn my back on the submarine. I can do the tap dance, I can do the splits. Don't! He yells. I stop. Don't what? I ask. Don't sing that song. I'm breathing hard from jumping, but I'm also thinking hard. I look at his face. If the next thing I say is the wrong thing, I'm gonna get hit. Should I sing a different song? I ask. No, hijo, no singing. All you do is jump and count, okay? Every day you're training, you try to jump a little bit more. Okay, I say, I'll count.
You know, looking back on that gesture of his to buy me that boxing gear, I really felt a lot of compassion for my father in that moment because he lost his father when he was a very small child and had to go out and work in the world to support the family from the time he was 4 or 5 years old. He was out selling newspapers by himself in Mexicali. He experienced, you know, a lot of the need to survive and to fight, to physically fight. And so the way he understood the world was one where that possibility of physical combat was always present and that risk of it was always present. And so if you're going to take care of your son, you need to have him be prepared for that. And so that was, I think, you know, the drive behind that. I think he looked at me and I was this kind of quiet, artistic, kind of shy kid. And he was thinking, I got to toughen this kid up. So he bought this boxing gear. And of course, when you do that, there's a tragicomic element to that because it really showed like the complete inability that parents sometimes have, the complete inability to just really see their child for who they are, as opposed to seeing them for who you want them to be. It could not have been a less appropriate gift in some ways because this child had no combativeness in him. And of course, the kid in his queerness, he's unpacking all this boxing and wrestling gear. And the thing that really excites him is the jump rope because he's a sissy boy and he likes jumping rope. And so it was this complete thwarting of the intention of the gift.
Raimundo the Queer's great gift and burden was to look any woman in the face and envision the perfect hairdo for her. The route to maximum beauty always seemed clear to him, a luminous path that glowed as if marked in reflective highway paint. When asked, he told his clients the truth and pointed the way to the Via Bella, but not everyone was ready to walk that narrow path. Sadly, they could not imagine the glories of what he saw for them, the haircut that soared beyond fashion and even taste to hover in the rarefied realm of eleganza. None of this could they see on their march towards the unholy mirage of their preferred haircut. Raimundo always gave his clients what they asked for, but each time they declined his offer of eleganza, they unknowingly pricked his heart. Like all prophets, he suffered horribly.
You've also got a lot of humor in these stories. I mean, there's a lot of funny stuff and moments of levity. Why is humor important to you?
I grew up with funny people. Mm-hmm. My parents were funny. My grandparents were funny. It was a survival mechanism to survive the rigors and really the horrors sometime of life, is to be able to deploy that gallows humor to kind of step back, take a breath, and just laugh, if for no other reason than because you made it through and you're still alive. So that was one thing. I think the other thing that that is important for me is that without the humor, I think my stories could easily sink into the realm of the abject. Just the poverty, just the violence, just the pain, just the fear. If I did not have the humor to leaven it, it would become a kind of abject experience. And I don't think of my childhood, for all of its rigors, I don't think of it as abject. I just think of it as full. It was just the fullness of life.
Jaime Cortez, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you so much for inviting me and for your thoughtful questions. I appreciate it.
Jaime's book of short stories is called Gordo.